We've got that dreaded word called debt. We're using the IIF's global debt monitor data for the first 9 months of this year, annualized for the full year. So global debt is 464 trillion against a GDP. I think it was 117. US total debt, this all includes government debt, households, corporates, and financials. US debt, 136 trillion, which basically means that for every $1 of GDP growth, you need $4.50 of debt. Global liquidity is flatlining. It's probably going to continue to flatline, if not fall, over the next 3 to 6 months. At the appropriate time, you need to be out of paper assets into real assets. What do I mean by real assets? Precious metals, base metals at the appropriate time, land, art, and food. Food prices are going to soar for weather-related reasons and demand.
Good day, everyone. Welcome to Natural Resource Stocks, where we mine for stories that matter. And I'm just Steve Yang here today. I'm thrilled to have Simon Hunt with me, a macro thinker I follow at a Strategic Services and someone I deeply respect. So, Simon, thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Been a pleasure.
Well,
it
Simon,
will be a pleasure. May not be a pleasure Simon, for your listeners to what I have to say. But it's a pleasure
they're
to
not
be
here.
On your show.
I can tell you, they're not here to listen to me. They're here to listen to you. So, you know, Simon, we're only a month and a half in, and so much has already happened. There seems to be so much noise and distractions. It's hard to know what part of the headlines is something we need to pay attention to. We get pulled in different directions. So, from your perspective, what are the biggest forces you're watching this year, and what really matters in terms of where things might be headed?
That's a massive question. We've really got a number of opposing forces. First of all, in financial markets, we've got that dreaded word called debt. We're using the IIF's global debt monitor data for the first 9 months of this year, annualized for the full year. So global debt is 464 trillion against a GDP, I think it was 117. US total debt, this all includes government debt, households, corporates, and financials. US debt, 136 trillion, which basically means that for every $1 of GDP growth, you need $4.50 of debt. The problem, or one of the problems, is the bond market. It's not just the fact that America has to issue increasing amounts of bonds to cover the increase that will continue to be in total debt, but also to cover the growing interest cost. On top of that, something like 10 trillion of bonds that have to be refinanced over the coming 12 months. 10 trillion in round numbers is one third of America's annual GDP. So my take is as follows. Global liquidity is flatlining. It's probably going to continue to flatline, if not fall, over the next 3 to 6 months. That is going to put pressure on asset prices, which includes equities, base metals like copper, and precious metals. Our take is that by October, we will have seen equity prices on average falling by 20 to 30%. And I think that from the work that we follow, that probably started on the 11th, 2 days ago. I think we will see a good correction in gold and silver. Gold probably down to 4,000, maybe even 3,500. And silver, a very good correction too. Base metals will also fall. We have a very big fall in copper prices because they've been hyped up regardless of the fundamentals, which were in surplus in 24, 25, and will be this year. On the other hand, because of the desperate need for the Treasury to bring 10-year Treasuries down in order to help refinance the 10 trillion, we will see a temporary fall in 10-year Treasury yields to about 3%. So all of this means that we're going to be in extremely volatile environment, not only for this year, but probably out until 2032. The cycle waves that we follow, which include the W.D. Gans 60-year cycle, and within the 60-year cycle, it's a 25-year cycle and a 17-year cycle. And they all converge starting now. So, if we're lucky, following the 20 to 30% correction in equity markets, that's an average, some will fall more than others. We will then see recovery based on inflation starting in probably in the fourth quarter. But the problem with that recovery, which will be inflation driven, is that 10-year treasuries yields will begin rising. probably having fallen to 3% in the middle of this year. We'll see 4.5 to 5 at the end of this year, 6 to 8% in 2027, and 2028, 2029, double digits. All on the back of inflation rising in comparable terms. So you will see, take the S&P as an example, probably hit something like 16,000 in 2020, end of 2027, 2028, and then an ultimate peak of 28,000. But what does that mean? In constant 2026 dollars, it actually means 14,300, because you will be seeing a rapid fall in the dollar index. So the moral of the story is really, at the appropriate time, you need to be out of paper assets into real assets. What do I mean by real assets? Precious metals, base metals at the appropriate time, land, art, and food. Food prices are going to soar for weather-related reasons and demand. So for guys that have gardens, it may sound horrible, but convert your garden into a vegetable garden. Then you become more self-contained. So talking on financial markets. Then on top of that, we have to look at the geopolitical world, because what we are seeing is a coming conflict, to be polite, between the old world led by America and the new world in the form of the BRICS group of nations, led by Russia, China, and India. What we're seeing at the moment are frictions which show up in the war between NATO and Russia over Ukraine, the potential strike by Israel and America on Iran, on America setting up subversive groups in Central Asia that can be sent into Russia to create confusion. And then we have to look at the growing tensions between China and America, and Russia and America. Take the latter one. Russia's foreign secretary, Lavrov, made 3 very powerful interviews recently. The bottom line being that relations between Russia and China are going in the wrong direction. And I think that the reality is that the discussions which Trump's negotiators have been having in the Kremlin will go absolutely nowhere, because they were basically financial, and the Kremlin is not going to play that game. And the relationships between China and America are getting more and more tense. And in particular, the, whatever you like to call it, the invasion of America into Venezuela, which in turn canceled the oil contracts amounting to what I heard was $100 billion that China had with Venezuela. And what did Russia, what did China do? They hit American companies with five different issues, which I've actually forgotten about, but they hurt the American companies. All non-announced, but that's what they physically did. I think it is highly unlikely that there will be a meeting between Trump and President Xi in April or in any month of this year. So this really brings us to, well, first of all, over Ukraine. The end of the war will not be by diplomacy. It will be won on the battlefield. And Russia will then dictate the terms, which will be take them or leave them. One of the pieces that Trump's negotiators have been up to is who is going to benefit from the reconstruction of Ukraine. Obviously, the play being that American companies and financial institutions who have a lot of loans at stake in Ukraine will benefit. But my take is that Russia will say reconstruction will go to Russian companies and to BRICS member companies. So cutting America out and the EU out entirely. So there you are. That's my opening comments.
Simon, a bunch of questions. First question is, you said the battle for Ukraine is not going to end with diplomacy, but with on the battlefield. And then you said that Russia will be the one to dictate the terms. Can you expand on that a little bit more? Are you suggesting that Russia wins the war?
Oh, there's no question. No question. Russia will take what it wants, which will include Kharkov, Odessa, and possibly even Kiev.
For Americans who think that, you know, they're invincible because of the strong military, what gives Russia the edge over in Ukraine?
A, superior equipment. B, superior battle-trained soldiers, and C, planning.
And so when Russia dictates the terms, I mean, is the, first of all, the Venezuela and Greenland, you mentioned that those things, they seem interconnected with China and Russia somehow. Like you said, Venezuela to affect China directly. And even Greenland, it's the narrative is to protect U.S. from Russia. How much of a threat is Russia to the mainland U.S.? Is Greenland that strategic? Is it just mainly for, is it also for natural resources, or is it mostly military proximity and national defense?
Russia is no threat, or would be no threat to America, if America negotiated in good faith, which they have not been doing, either directly with Russia, directly with China, or directly with Iran. So these, China and Russia, just do not trust America.
Yeah. So the news I've been hearing that Russia and the U.S. are have an imminent deal prop where Russia returns to the U.S. dollar and all that stuff is fake news, is what I'm hearing you say.
In an old-fashioned terminology, that's bullshit.
Well, Simon, there seems to be, without saying, growing tension. It's there has been a huge distrust for a long time. And the U.S. recently made a deal with India, is my understanding, where the centerpiece of the deal is that India pivots away from Russian oil. And that part doesn't seem to be a mere footnote, you know, or a throw-in.
All that's happened is that Russia has exported to Malaysia and other Asian countries, which re-export back into India. End of story. No change. All looked good on.
So there seems to be a lot of
all great PR, but the reality is quite different.
The reality is that China, Russia, and the U.S. will never come to terms, is what I'm hearing you say. Did I also hear you say that Russia and China are having growing tension between them?
No. Okay. No, I never said that.
Okay. Just want to make sure I didn't hear that.
No. The relationship just gets stronger.
Yeah. So the, you know, China on the U.S. Treasury front, they're dumping like crazy. And that's obviously more than a diversification.
Well, hold on a moment. You said China is dumping U.S. Treasuries like crazy.
Or, I mean, is that true or false?
I don't think so.
Okay. Please expand on that.
The actual statement that China made was, if you hold on a moment, I've got it here. Chinese regulators have recently instructed major domestic banks to curb additional exposure to U.S. treasuries and in some cases pare back existing positions, according to people familiar with the discussions. The guidance, delivered verbally and without explicit targets or timelines, was framed as a management measure tied to concentration and volatility concerns rather than a statement on U.S. credit worthiness or geopolitics. So, yeah, I mean, China has been selling U.S. treasuries, but carefully. There is another story which probably has some substance. There has been a rumor going around that China has disposed of nearly all its treasury holdings through the derivatives market. I had a friend who unfortunately, a very close friend, unfortunately, who passed away about a decade ago. He said, Simon, he is an extremely well-placed person, very well-placed. So when he says something, it's probably true. About a decade ago, he said, Simon, China has disposed of nearly all of its treasury holdings through the derivative markets, with the banks, American banks, being the major takers. Now, even if it's true, it's never going to come out. So I can't confirm it. I'm merely reporting a rumor going around today and something that a well-placed person told me 10 years or so ago.
Yeah. Man, I don't even know where to, my thoughts go with that. So you think there's some truth to that, possibly?
Yeah. Whether it's all or whether it's any part or what percentage, I think there's probably some truth to it.
Yeah, so we get a lot of news right now in the U.S. regarding the Epstein files. I'm not here to talk about the Epstein files. I hear, the word impeachment. I'm not here to talk about impeachment. But there's a lot of news out there that is relevant, and there's news that's not relevant. And it's I'm wondering how much of it's just distraction from what really goes on, or is this something that's really related to where things might be headed that we really need to be paying attention to?
Well, there's a rumor going around from some knowledgeable people that Mossad has certain files that incriminate President Trump, and that this might have been brought up in the recent meetings between Netanyahu and his team, which included the head of Mossad and the White House.
And you think that media, I mean, I guess what I want to know is, first of all, is this something that, in terms of market, and I think I heard someone say, if the Epstein files came out in full, it would ruin the whole structure.
No, I've got no comment at all.
Not at all, Simon.
I don't follow the Epstein.
Yeah. I'm not here to talk about the Epstein file. But there's a lot of news out there. And in terms of what's important, I mean, what you're watching carefully and how it affects the markets, you're keeping a close eye on China as usual. And you're suggesting that we move our assets into food, precious metals, and things like that, and land and art, right? So when I hear people say 2026 is going to be a year where it's not to gain money, but not to lose money, where the S&P and the market's going to be down, and including you saying the copper
and gold and silver and things like that might see a correction. Where is a good place to be parking our money right now?
You're obviously talking short term.
I'll take Simon's take.
You take
I'll,
what?
I'll take your short term. I'll take your short term, and I'll take your long term. You know, and,
cash. So that when the correction is close to bottoming out, you've got firepower to move back into the market. Whether it be in precious metals or equities or whatever is one's own choice.
Yeah. Simon, you've been doing this for quite some time, and you have Simon Hunt Strategic Services. I'm a fan, but if you can tell us kind of what that's all about and how people can benefit from that.
Two ways you can contact us. The first is simon@shss.com and simon-hunt.com. And we provide detailed services on the global macro situation, including geopolitics, China, and the copper industry. And we put all the dots together to come up to our conclusions, which I've just been expressing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm hoping there's some good news in there. I mean, things just seem pretty bleak right now. Simon, thank you so much for your time, your insights. Let's all buckle up, everybody. Check out Strategic Services. I'll put those in the show notes. Everybody, stay smart, stay curious, stay disciplined, and be careful. And be good.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Simon.
It's been a pleasure. Bye. Cheers.